You're listening to Princeton Lacks Cash, the official podcast of the six-time NCAA national champion Princeton men's lacrosse program. Now here's your host, Jerry Price.
Welcome to the next edition of the Princeton Lacks Cash. Jerry Price here, joined by Princeton Tiger head coach Matt Madelon after a one-week absence. And one thing I think we should do before we get started today is to thank Cody Kruschel, who has been the person who's basically engineered all of our Lacks Casts and without whom we would never get these Lacks Casts from just you and me sitting here chatting in my office to actually up on the webpage where people can listen to him. So I think we should thank Cody.
You bet. We're glad, Cody. You also made our captains sound very good, as you do me every week.
Speaking of your captains, they did a very good job. I think that, you know, a lot of times when you talk to athletes, college athletes, in what can be considered a formal setting like this, I mean, we're sitting in my office, but like, you know, actually recording what they say, they get very wooden and they don't want to say the wrong thing. But I thought that they were, you know, they did a really good job of being who they were.
I thought it was great. It was, you know, it's always special when you get some insight into the program and hear from players, you know, especially our captains. But, you know, those are two special guys, and we were thrilled to have them on the Lacks Cast, and I thought they did an awesome job.
Let's talk a little bit about the game last week against Yale, and we'll talk about the game coming up Saturday against Brown, and we'll talk about some other things. But, you know, if we want to talk about the game last week, we have to start by talking about faceoffs. 7 out of 33 faceoffs for Princeton. It led to a, you know, what do you want to call it, 75 to 80% possession time for Yale, which really was the difference in the game. I mean, they just had the ball the entire time. Takes you out of what you want to do offensively and puts a lot of pressure on the defense, but also on the offense, because once you do have possession of the ball, you're like, well, we have possession. Do we want to push it or do we want to hold it for a little while because we're not sure we're going to get possession again? And it's about the worst way to play. And still, with all of that, it was a 16-13 game, and it was a would have been a one-goal game with 2.5 minutes to go if the goal that Currier had scored had been not been called for being in the crease. You know, had no angle. I'm going to assume the official standing there got the call right, but I'm saying it just was a huge momentum swing because instead of a one-goal game, Yale went down and then scored a bit of a fluky goal after a save and batted it in the goal. But, you know, what do you take away from that game, especially regarding the faceoffs?
You know, we constantly address the issue. You know, it's something we work on day in and day out. As much as the face-off battle was swayed towards Yale's direction, and that young man did an excellent job facing off and combating kind of our techniques to create 50-50 ground balls up there, you know, we were still in position to swing that possession battle, whether it was through extra man opportunities or through the clearing battle. And, you know, unfortunately, it came too little too late and we weren't able to string it together. But those guys did a good job. I think that, you know, in my tenure here, you know, we've been up and down at the faceoff X. And that's somewhere where we're looking to gain consistency. And I think it'll kind of permeate through our program once we do. But, you know, we're looking forward to our next opportunity. And we're going to continue to have great faceoff battles and great faceoff matchups. And we're going to use a handful of different techniques and a bunch of different guys, and we're going to try to manufacture possessions every way we can.
Yeah, you talk about faceoffs, and I mean, you know, you can go back a long time, and Princeton, you know, Princeton's won national championship games, most recently in 2001, where it got almost similar numbers of faceoffs from the other day. But, you know, people talk about eliminating faceoffs from games, you know, just giving the ball to the goalie of the team that just got scored upon and let them start a clear. Think that there's too much emphasis on the face-off in lacrosse. The rules are constantly changing to try to adjust to, you know, whatever number of issues arise from lacrosse. The mechanics of it are constantly changing. Just forgetting that we just had a game where we got dominated on face-offs, what do you think of it?
Sure. I mean, it's easy for me to say, hey, I'd love to wipe it, you know, make it a jump ball or whatever it may be, you know. But, you know, how it boils down in terms of, you know, what I think about the face-offs and the rule. I think our sport right now it's actually very difficult to officiate. There's a lot of times, there are often times where officials have to make these split-second decisions, and it's tough to do. There's a lot of holding, there's a lot of grabbing, there's a lot of pushing. It's a very physical part of the field. So I think, you know, not only at the face-off X, but in terms of timer-ons and the subjectivity there and in terms of the crease play, I think there's a lot of – there are there are a lot of crucial parts in our game and our sport right now that are very difficult to officiate. I think the officials in our game do an outstanding job. I think that, you know, coaches are all over them, whether it's to, you know, bring energy to their team, gain a few calls down the road, whatever it may be, you know, or just get an explanation for a call because it is so difficult at times to understand.
Well, I mean, one thing I would say is the entire face-off mechanism is, I think it's an exciting part of a game. You know, when your team is getting dominated like Princeton was the other day, or Princeton is going on a big run like it did against Hopkins because it was winning every face-off, I think it just the drama builds on each time because it's not like basketball where you're going to get possession when the other team scores, or football where the other team has to kick off, or baseball where there's the end of the inning. I think it's a very you know, dramatic part of the game. I just think the problem is the rules have changed so many times over, you know, in recent years, and the mechanics for the officials, it is a very difficult thing for an official to do, especially set the ball. Now you're backing away from the play as you're blowing the whistle. I mean, it's not an easy thing for the officials. And the other thing that's, I think, is inadvertently become a very difficult situation for officials is the, did he leave his feet of his own volition land in the crease after the goal was scored, or was he pushed into the crease? And, I mean, I can't think of a specific instance where this has impacted Princeton so far this year, but, you know, I've seen it a lot on TV, and maybe it hasn't, I just can't remember it, but that's a really tough one where, you know, you the ball's in the goal, the other team is called for a penalty for pushing, and yet the goal doesn't count. It seems like, you know, counterintuitive in some ways, but I think that's the toughest call.
It really is, and I mean, the mechanics are difficult, too, from the, you know, the sideline official to the offside line official, and you know, who's watching the push, who's watching the ball, who's watching the body. So, and I think that that's when those decisions get made, in those split-second decisions, that at times there are mistakes or at times there's not enough discussion about it. I think, you know, again, we play a lot around the crease in terms of our attackmen. And, you know, I can't think of a time this year where we've been on the receiving end of maybe a bad call. I think at times we may disagree during the game, but when you go back and watch it at film, you may see it differently. But it is very, very difficult to call. It is, there's a lot going on, and it's very difficult for an official to say, hey, I'm just going to watch this part, or I'm just going to watch this part, because if you're the official on the far side and your mechanic may be, you know, to watch this part of the play, well, how are you watching crease violations if you don't know when the ball crosses the goal line? So I just think that part of it is very difficult. But they're constantly doing a good job in terms of figuring out how to best make those calls.
And I also think that the recent rule changes over the last maybe 6 years, it's done in 2-year cycles, but the idea of going from, you know, when it used to be that you had to keep it in the box when you were either had the stall warning or keep it in the box when you were up in the last 2 minutes of the game, versus what it's become now, which is the 30-second timer on if there's a stall warning, but you don't have to keep it in the box once you've cleared it. I think, and the quick restarts especially, I think those rules have really opened up the game. And I think that those, I would not want to see a shot clock put in. I think it works pretty well the way it is now. The only issue, of course, is do you call the last 2 minutes of a game, of a one-goal game, the same way in terms of a shot clock that you call it in the second quarter when it's, you know, 4-3. But, you know, again, that's putting a lot of pressure on officials. But I like the way the rules have evolved to help the tempo of the game and the pace of the game.
Yeah, we do as well. I mean, specifically our staff. It's funny, you know, to start this year, I was being interviewed by Inside Lacrosse, and they had asked, you know, what is, you know, if you could change anything in the game of lacrosse, or if you were the president of lacrosse for a day, what would you change? And my immediate response was to have the same rules through all levels of lacrosse, through youth lacrosse, through intermediate lacrosse, through high school lacrosse, through college lacrosse, through professional lacrosse, through international lacrosse. And my main thought process behind that is it will allow officials to grow within the game, and you will continue to develop officials understanding the rules. So I think that, you know, it is difficult. I mean, we're fortunate in the parts of the country where we are, but, you know, I was at a Division III school where we would strategically schedule games on Sundays so that we could get Division I officiating crews to come over and ref our games rather than guys coming up through the ranks learning how to officiate games. You know, we felt that helped us.
So let's talk a little bit more about Princeton specifically, and let's talk about Gavin McBride, who didn't have a point as a freshman and now is over 100 in his career. He went over 100 against Yale. He's had 5 goals in each of the last 2 games. you know, he has really developed into a legitimate All-America level scorer. And at the same time, he's flown under the radar a lot. He wasn't even all Ivy League last year in first, second, or honorable mention. And then the other thing about him is he's not a product of Michael Sowers putting the ball in a stick on the crease. Like, he does a lot of that on his own. He benefits from, as anybody does, of playing with Sowers. But, you know, he creates a lot of things on his own. And he's developed into maybe even beyond what he thought he would be when he was a freshman.
I mean, we love Gavin. We love him as a player, a person, a captain, a team member. You know, and the Ivy Leagues, if you look over his career, I mean, they have had incredible attackmen, very dynamic superstar attackmen. So, you know, I'm not saying we're thrilled that Gav's sliding under the radar.
I don't think he's doing it anymore.
But no, he's not.
This point of his career, yeah.
No, he's not. And, of course, you know, we want the recognition for our guys in terms of individual awards. I think it only helps the program. And it does reward the guys for an outstanding career or an outstanding season. But you're right. Gav creates it in all ways. He does it on, you know, he does it on man up. He does it dodging. He does it feeding. He does it off ball. He really is a heck of a player. And, you know, it's funny. My wife and I were sitting there listening, you know, to our captains kind of on their podcast, and you hear Gav talk about his culture that he was brought up in, and you can see how it's permeated through his day-to-day work and then how he kind of handles our team as a captain. So we're thrilled, and we hope that he does garner the recognition he deserves.
I mean, he's like a guy who didn't have a lot of points as a freshman in basketball and then ended up as a 1,000-point scorer, you know, for him to—
That's incredible.
And so the next 100-point scorer in Princeton history is almost surely going to be Zach Currier, barring something unforeseen or outrageous. He has 95 points heading into this weekend. Beyond, like, you know, look, Zach struggled in the face-off game against Yale, but he still, even doing that, did something that I can't imagine anybody's ever done before in lacrosse, and that is take 22 face-offs in a game and end up with the same number of face-off wins as goals. Because he had 4 face-off wins, but he also had 4 goals, 2 assists. Yeah, he did. Other than winning faceoffs clean, he was the usual Zach Currier. But I think what people tend to forget about him is what a good offensive player he is. The amount of points he can put up, and you know, he's going to get to 100 points, and he's a legitimate scoring threat. And when you think of Currier, I think people think, you know, he does it all. He causes turnovers. He picks up ground balls. He's a faceoff guy, but he's going to be over 100 points. And the other thing about Zach is he's the only player in the country in the top 25. And maybe ever, this year I looked up, maybe ever in ground balls per game, caused turnovers per game, and assists per game. So even if you think of Currier being a scorer, you're thinking goals, not assists. But he actually has more assists than goals.
He's a special one. You know, we constantly, you know, we get to talk about him often, and we're thrilled to. He's a guy that we use in every different way. And Jerry had just mentioned that, but in terms of the faceoff battle, even against Yale, you know, Zach's not a guy that's going to win it clean. He's going to muck it up. He's going to create 50-50 ground balls, and we're going to hope to make it a 3v3 battle. And he does that, you know, he does a great job with that. I think the most impressive thing is his grit and conditioning. I mean, we grind him to the bone, and he doesn't balk. You know, he's upset when we rest him. And I think that, you know, we're doing that knowing, you know, we're hoping to play deep in May here, but it's incredible. I mean, you know, to come out of a game with that stat line and that type of production, it's really, really special.
I mean, who else? Seriously, like, I try to think of players who could do these kinds of things, but he had 4 goals and 2 assists against Yale and took 22 faceoffs. To take 22 faceoffs in a game wears you down physically to the point where you're probably not going to get 4 goals and 2 assists, and yet he did all those things.
Yeah, he really did. You know, and it's the workload that he has to handle for us right now, and he's happy to do it. But, you know, we'll hope to find our groove and kind of lighten his load elsewhere where he can, you know, kind of start exploding maybe more on the offensive end. And this game may be the outlier. You know, he was just so impressive in all aspects of it.
So we talk about the same guys every week, you know, McBride and Currier and Sowers and Riley Thompson and, you know, Austin Sims and, you know, all the guys who score a lot of goals and all the guys, and then Tyler Blaisdell.
Yeah, they're the exciting ones.
So Tyler, by the way, just, you know, just throw that out there. Tyler last year was 5th in the league in saves per game, save percentage, and goals against average. He's 1st in all 3 of those this year, which is pretty good. But let's pick somebody. I'll let you pick the person. Pick one guy that we don't really talk about too much ever here who stands out a bit and is worthy of, you know, a mention. And
absolutely. It's an easy one. It's Danny Winchu. He's a defenseman that, you know, he's covered the top matchup for us a lot. And, you know, he's a size strength guy. He's really doing a good job understanding our system. And he kind of falls in line with, you know, it's easy to pick Danny out because, you know, you look at a most improved player or somebody that didn't have a big role last year and to be able to come in, you know, chip away at the depth chart, find himself, you know, in the top three week in and week out. And then, you know, we just, you know, we're not matchup oriented. So, you know, we just try to find the best matchups for us at that time and we'll shift them throughout games. But, you know, Danny's had to cover everyone from the first guy to the second guy to the third guy, hasn't missed a beat. And, you know, without, you know, alongside of mentioning someone like Danny Winchu, you've got to mention our D midfield crew. You know, it starts, you know, it was anchored by Sam Gravett, Mike Marine, Chase Williams, JT Caputo. I mean, those four guys, being able to roll those four consistently, it's just, you know, we're very, very fortunate. Those are big, strong, tough athletes that understand the defensive system, that are able to take some chances offensively. So I think that whole defensive crew, you know, it's easy to highlight the offensive guys, and it's exciting. But those guys have done an outstanding job for us in terms of kind of shifting our defensive prowess and then continuing to move us in the right direction.
So you mentioned wanting to play deep into May. There's six games left in the regular season, all in April. The first weekend of May is the Ivy League tournament, and of course the goal is to be playing in that. That's the first goal. Yale right now 2-0, Brown 1-0, Princeton, Penn, Harvard all 1-1, and Cornell and Dartmouth both looking for their first win in the league. But of course, it's early, so a lot can change. But a big game Saturday. Brown comes here. It's a 1 o'clock faceoff Saturday on Sherrod Field. Two of the top offensive teams in the country, in both in scoring offense and shooting percentage, averaging nearly 30 goals between the two teams per game. Both teams, Princeton number one in the country in shooting percentage, Brown number eight in the country in shooting percentage. As a team, Princeton shooting 387 as a team, which is extraordinary. Brown's not that far behind, 338. My experience in games like that is they usually end up 8-7.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
But, you know, I mean, what do you think? I mean, you know, Brown has arguably the best player in the country in Dylan Malloy. You know, Brown has all those poles who are athletic. They like to get out and they like to push the tempo, and Princeton's pretty comfortable playing that way. So, you know, what do you think of a game like this?
I'd imagine it's going to be an up-and-down game. You know, Dylan Malloy is a special player. Brown's finding their groove right now. They've got a couple young guys in certain spots that are now have, you know, a handful of games under their experience and are starting to play a little more like sophomores than freshmen or like juniors than sophomores. So I'd imagine it'll be an up-and-down game. You know, we're comfortable playing both speeds. We've been training all year to play fast, play slow. We'll kind of take it in stride.
What about Malloy? You know, he last year 6 goals and 5 assists against Princeton, and that's not even his career high in points. He had a 13-point game against Michigan in 2015. Yeah, he's a guy who, you know, people consider him to have been a little bit under the radar coming into college, but really from the first time I saw him play, I was like, whoa. I mean, you know, he's an impressive guy physically, and, you know, he's an impressive guy physically, but he's not just a big kid who bowls people over. He sees the field. He's as good a passer as he is a finisher. You know, he's a real matchup challenge for anybody.
He's done a really good job continuing to grow as a lacrosse player. He was, you know, and I can't speak for the Brown staff of old. I don't know when he came into the recruiting fold, but he wasn't one of those big name recruits coming out. And then to be able to come in and I've had to play against him every year, so I've got to see this young man grow. And, you know, he started his career as this bulldodging, you know, thumping, charging attackman. And guys like Kip Turner, you know, and those guys up there, and Sean Kerwin and Lars, they did an outstanding job developing him into a multidimensional player. I mean, when you're a big, thumping attackman, you know, defend him by sliding, staying on the double. And then, you know, what he's done an outstanding job of, and what garnered him the national recognition last year of the Atorton was, you know, his ability to feed and make the players around him better. So he's an outstanding player. You know, we're thrilled to have, you know, players like that in the Ivy League, and you know, it's one game a year that maybe we're not thrilled he's in the league.
It'll be his last time playing against Princeton in the regular season, at least, you know, possibly down the road in an Ivy League tournament if it were to come to be. Also, you know, they have the Poles who, you know, like to not just push the ball but also shoot. you know, Alex Tullett, I think he was first team All America last year, might have been second team All America. Larkin Kemp, I mean, they might have both been first team All America last year. You know, these are guys who not only have played well against a lot of people, but they have played really well against Princeton. And then JJ Encyclo, who is he's not the offensive threat maybe that the other ones are, but he's one of the nation leaders in caused turnovers. That's three pretty good poles you're starting out seeing there.
Yeah, they've got an outstanding defense. The two poles, they do a great job defensively, and they are very offensive-minded. Slick sticks, ability to make plays within the lines and offensively. So that's a nice dynamic to have on a team. And then, as you mentioned, JJ down low, you know, he's a big physical presence. So, you know, we're excited for the matchup.
What about when it gets to be April and you're in the second half of the season and now you're in the middle of the league season? It goes really fast. I mean, it doesn't seem like that long ago we were playing NJIT in the first game, and now all of a sudden, you know, the regular season flies by, but now you're in a situation where really everything is important from here on out. I mean, hopefully the weather gets a little better. March's weather hasn't been great. You know, you want to play big games at this time of year, and you want to play more of them next month. But is there a point in the season where things sort of get a little more serious?
I don't know necessarily if they get a little more serious. I think, you know, we've always put the emphasis on Ivy games. You know, we call them ticket ball games, and, you know, we look to kind of collect as many tickets as we possibly can to kind of set ourselves up for an Ivy League tournament. Now, you know, I think if you look back at our schedule, we had a lot of Saturday, Tuesday, Friday, Tuesday. We played a lot of games early in the season, and now we get into a time where we get a little more time to prepare. We get a little more time to rest our guys. So I think that as you prepare more, I think guys sense that sensitivity to how important these games are. But, you know, for us, every game, first game to the last game is important.
Coach Madeline, thank you for joining us again on the latest edition of the Princeton LaxCast.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Thank you, Tiger Faithful.
So it's Princeton and Brown Saturday at 1 on Sherrod Field. We'll be back next Thursday. We'll talk about that game. We'll look ahead to Princeton stepping out of the league for the last two times. They'll play at Stony Brook. Just has developed into a pretty good April rivalry where both teams just coincidentally have the same week off year after year in their league, and you know it's close and it's usually a good team and a good game. And then of course Lehigh this Tuesday the following that at Lehigh before finishing up with three Ivy League games. So it's the Tigers and Brown on Saturday at 1 o'clock. And thank you for being here on the Princeton Tiger LaxCast.